Welcome to the Pure Athlete Podcast, a show that exists to equip young athletes, parents, and coaches as they journey through their youth sports experience. We sit down with some of your favorite athletes to hear about their most memorable moments, helpful tips, and valuable lessons from their youth sports career. Today's episode features three-time Olympic gold medalist and beach volleyball legend, Misty May Trainer. Enjoy the show.
Well, welcome to the Pure Athlete Show. My name is Jeff Francoeur, and I have my partners, Mr. Brad Williams and Mr. Britt Lee, with us today. Hello, man.
How you doing?
Hey, Jeff. How you doing?
I am good. I'm just excited about today's guest. Today's guest is Misty May Trainer, and I got to know Misty in 2010. I played with her husband, Matt Trainer, in the World Series with the Texas Rangers, and so, you know, Misty, of course, was on every trip with us, with my wife and her and all the wives. And, you know, we had a lot of fun really that whole month going through, you know, winning the ALDS to winning the ALCS. We beat the Yankees and she was a part of that. And of course, for me, growing up a big sports fan, I got the opportunity to talk to her a lot, whether it was on the plane, you know, at the hotel for dinner. And what an amazing story she has, what an amazing career. But of course, you know, more importantly, she's an awesome mom, an awesome person, has three girls. And so, Britt, I'm going to let you talk a little more of the sports attribute she brings. But we're so excited to have Misty May on today.
Man, you said it, Jeff. I am so excited about today's show. And, you know, we could talk for a long time about Misty's accomplishments. And we'll talk about a couple in just a moment. But, you know, what really excites me is we want our audience to know that Pure Athlete is not just about football and baseball and basketball. We're really about all the sports. And as we move forward, we're going to have athletes from, you know, virtually every sport come and talk to our audience and we'll hear their story. And as you just said, today is volleyball. And, you know, volleyball is the fifth largest sport in the world. And for young girls here in the U.S., it's the most popular sport. So, and we are today going to hear from not just a really good former volleyball player, but we're going to hear from a legend. So, you know, if we were talking about basketball today, it would be like we're hearing from Kobe or Michael. I mean, Misty is that good. She's an icon in the sport of volleyball. And so I can't wait to hear her story. And let me just share like two things about her. The first one probably most of our audience is aware of, but Misty was one half of really the greatest team ever in beach volleyball. She and Carrie Walsh won three gold medals from three separate Olympics and really were, you know, from an American standpoint, really were the stars of the games in almost all three of those Olympics. But what you may not know is before beach volleyball, Misty had just a stellar career indoors. In fact, at Long Beach State University, she went there in the mid to late 90s and won a bunch of stuff, not the least of which was in 1998, they went undefeated and won the NCAA National Championship. And Misty was Player of the Year, NCAA Player of the Year indoors for 2 years. So, man, she's done it all in volleyball, and there's a whole bunch of other things we could talk about, but I know our audience is anxious to hear from her. So, Jeff, why don't you welcome her in?
Yes, let's welcome Misty May to the podcast today on Pure Athlete. Hello, Misty.
Hi, how are you?
Hey, hello. Misty.
Good. Welcome to the Pure Athlete podcast.
Oh, thank you. Thanks for having me.
We are so excited to have you. I told a story about 2010, getting to go through the postseason with you and your husband, Matt and Katie, how much fun we had. So we've given some background, but just kind of let everybody know, what are you up to now?
Oh, geez. Well, today or no. So before London, I completed my master's degree. So I got a master's in coaching and athletic administration. I've always had this passion for coaching. And there was a junior college in Long Beach that most of my friends went through when I was at Long Beach State. And I think you talked about winning the national championships at Long Beach State. But that program kind of went south a little bit. And I was like, I live in the area. Most people wondered why I didn't want to coach Division One. And one of the reasons why I didn't want to be away from my family. You know, Matt and I traveled so much with our playing careers, we didn't want to be away. And my parents coached junior college. And I just felt with a family, that's just a more relaxed environment. And I was able to serve the community a little more. So I took on a role as director, brought the program up and thought I'd be there 5 years at least. But then we had twins and made a move. And I, you know, my playing days are over. I still get out there once a week, usually on Thursdays. I play 4-on-4. But now it's about the kids. So Matt and my time majority is spent, now we're the taxi drivers and ATMs, like our parents were. And so our focus is the kids. We moved 3 years ago, but we're still decluttering, probably like everybody else. We are starting a foundation, though, May Trainer Ohana Foundation, just to bring, you know, help to areas in our community that we think we can serve. And it's a legacy we want to provide for our kids, you know, about giving and what it means to give. So I've got that starting, but I've kind of pushed the coaching aside. I had started a little club environment. I'm sure with baseball is the same way. It's the animal I hope I didn't see coming. And it's just a lot more than I would hope and like for the kids. So COVID hit and it was like, okay, thank you. I can stop the club and again, kind of just refocus. But now it's time. I'm sure Jeff's the same way. You know, you spend so much time training and you have this goal. It's like, what now? And now I just try to stay busy. I have a personal training certificate. I have my master's and I just like to keep my mind busy. So it's kind of whatever, but the kids are the priority.
And you're putting up with Matt too. So that's a full-time job.
Right? Both of us were like, we haven't seen this much of each other as long as we've been married.
One of my first questions that I would love to ask you, I always ask everybody this, what is your favorite memory from youth sports when you were younger?
For me, well, one, the joy of playing, just being able to participate in so many different sports. Now the kids don't have that luxury. I'm sure they probably could have the luxury, but I mean, I was a multi-sport athlete and got to play and try so many different sports. So that was fun for my time. But I think the friendships I gained, I still run into people I played AYSO soccer with when I was 5 years old or Facebook has kind of opened that up a little bit, but I run into people I played club soccer with. Volleyball friendships are still the same that I had at the club level. So it was the friendships and just interacting with so many different people from so many different walks of life.
Wow. So you're telling me you can actually play other sports and still win 3 gold medals in the Olympics? Is that what you're saying?
I think it made me a better athlete. And even most coaches hated me saying this when I'd go and give clinics, but I still believe in the multi-sport athlete. I still think you need to play different sports in order to make whatever your priority sport is just that much better. I felt like I adapted better. I was able to make adjustments. I was able to read the play. My footwork was easier. And I can tell when the athletes are just a single sport, you know, as a coach, especially volleyball, I don't want to say they become robots, but basically you have to tell them what to do instead of, you know, figuring it out and being able to read the game.
Misty, when you said you were a club coach as well, how do you, and you talked about it becoming a monster pretty quickly. How do you change that? How do you get the club sports kids to understand that they shouldn't be playing 365 days a year and that they should either take some time off or, like you said, better yet, find another sport to play?
It's hard. And I'm sorry for all you club owners, but everybody's now knows it's a money machine. And that's kind of what it's become, a money maker. And so they tried to hold you, I don't want a hostage as long as possible. The season seemed to draw out. More tournaments are being added because, oh, we can make more money here. There's more qualifiers. And I think they have lost the perspective on what it's supposed to be. Even the quality of coaching in some programs has been watered down so much. You know, there's only, and just the price of everything has been outrageous. I always told the parents, you have more power than you think. You know, take that power back. And it's not a power I'm paying for my daughter or son to play club and they need to be on the field. No, they need to learn how to fight for a position. They need to learn how to They should be given the right training and practice. You're really paying for the training, not guaranteed the playing time. That's how I always thought of it. And if you are part of a program, when we played club, school sports came first. So if you played a basketball, it was like, okay, you're committed to your school first, play basketball, and then you're an hour late to practice, but no problem. And that's what I try to tell the parents, you have power, because if you want your daughter or son to play another sport, then maybe you play for a club, maybe that's not traveling as much, or maybe they're not going to be a highlighted club like you think, but they're going to allow you to play those other sports, you know, but everybody, the bright lights go off and everybody wants to be a part of that program. And
can you, you talked a little bit about how you did play multiple sports. Can you kind of just share a little bit more about what did that look like in your middle school and teenage years? When did you start focusing just on volleyball?
So I didn't primarily play volleyball until I signed on the dotted line. So I wish I could have played soccer in college, but it was a club sport at Long Beach State. And then it was the same season as volleyball. But in high school, I did track, volleyball and soccer. And it wasn't until I started seeing some bad tackles being made at the high school level, then I pulled out of soccer at high school and just focused on club, because you got the more experienced players at the club level. But once I signed my letter of intent, that tells me I'm obligated to your school to play volleyball. I can't risk an injury doing something else. But I did do track my freshman year. Our coach allowed, there were three players that did track. It was myself, Christy Kiroff, another great athlete, and then Taiba Hanif, who ended up playing on the Olympic team. I spent just one semester on the track team, and then it just got to be too much with studying, and I was getting down, I was dwindling down 9% body fat, which is a lot going back and forth. But I, at that point, then I just took my focus to volleyball. But my middle school, I mean, I was getting driven around from practice to practice. It's like I'd leave dance. I did dance. And then I'd have my soccer shoes in the car and go to soccer practice. And
when did you think, though, that volleyball could be the main sport for you? Or, you know, because like you played, I played three sports. But like at some point you kind of realized, like, I'm pretty darn good at this.
Well, soccer, I had options to go to college as well. I just loved volleyball that much more. So it became more of like, what do I have a bigger passion in? And it was volleyball. I miss soccer. So I was hoping my kids would get involved in soccer, and the twins, they do play now. But that's what it was. It was that, what do I love that much more? My dad was a 68 Olympian in Mexico City. So I always heard his stories and saw pictures of him on the national team. But I wanted to be a veterinarian. I just never thought, oh yeah, that's nice, you went to the Olympics. Probably like how my kids with Matt and I are like, oh, that's nice, Dad, you played there. Or, oh, that's nice, you went. You don't fully understand the concept until later. And it wasn't until my sophomore year of college that I thought I could make a national team. But I thought I'd be playing indoor, not beach, because beach didn't enter the Olympics until 1996. So I grew up like USA baseball, doing the junior teams, you know, jumping to A2, playing national team. So I was in that system. They didn't have much of a system for beach. Now they do. Now they have high performance. They've got under 21s, under, you know, all these different levels for beach to help train the kids. And they even offer it in college now. But I didn't see myself being an Olympian until sophomore year in college. But even then, when I went to Long Beach State, I was recruited as an outside hitter. I'm 5'8 and a half. You wouldn't find a 5'8 and a half hitter on an Olympic team or national team now. But back then, yes. But I knew I had to make a positional change in order to further my international volleyball career. So I ended up setting, learning the game of setting. I had not set, learned everything I did from Debbie Green, my college coach. So freshman year going in, I practiced by myself for 2 weeks, no ball, just learning the position. So I had to make that positional change.
Misty, let's go back a little bit further. Like, obviously, you're a tremendous athlete. At what age did you realize, hey, I'm pretty good. I'm a pretty good athlete. Like, I'm like better than the kids I'm playing with on the playground, or I'm better than the kids playing soccer with at 5 years old. Like, at what age did you go, wow, I'm better than a lot of my friends at this sport?
It's funny because I grew up, I mean, probably had a ball in my hand before I could walk. The balloon was my first volleyball. My mom was a tennis player, so I had racket in hand when I was little. It's just something I didn't catch on to, but everybody else on that side did. So I was always at the beach in Santa Monica. My parents owned a pizza stand down there. So any off time, we're down at Santa Monica Pier. My daughter's 8 now, and I tell her, even when she was in kindergarten, if you can play with the boys, play with the boy, you know? And I think it was in kindergarten, because we'd have races in the playground and I'd be one of the fat, and I'd always be playing with the boy, like playing with the boys. They soccer, I just gravitated towards them because most of them were so active. And so I want to say kindergarten is, I don't want to be like, oh, I'm going to be a tremendous athlete, but I was like, oh, I can keep up. And it gave me certain goals and people to try to tag and catch. And so I think it was, you know, kindergarten that I felt like, wow, I could, you know, I'm pretty quick or pretty coordinated.
So let me ask this. You talked about that you were in the system, even though you played a bunch of sports, you were in the system from a volleyball standpoint. You played on, you know, national teams and so on and so forth. You're obviously super well known for, you know, having skills at almost every position needed. And that's, I'm sure, why your beach career was so awesome. How in a, as a teenager playing a whole bunch of sports, how did you develop that skill level to be able to compete? I'm sure some of the people you competed with were just playing volleyball, and I'm sure you're a freak athlete, but even freak athletes have to develop the skills. So training wise, what did you do to develop those skills?
You know, we didn't have private lessons. There was nothing known as private lessons back when we played. It was, you got your training in high school and then you went to club, and off season, you'd be down at the beach. You didn't have a foursome you played with like now. It become, I don't want to say very cliquish, but everybody sets their, okay, we need these four at the beach in order to practice. It's like, if you were by yourself, you found a way to be creative to do drills on your own. You know, if you had a backboard, you're passing against the backboard, you're serving against the backboard. It obviously helped with my dad being a volleyball player, and actually my mom too, because I always had somebody helping me with drills if I needed him to. But he grew up in the era, and I think this is being lost in sports, probably most sports, I won't say all the sports, but that everybody's only working on one skill, or they're put in one position. And when we played, and how I grew up with my dad coaching me, is I had to learn all the skills. I had to learn every position, because you never know what team you're on. You're going to be called upon. It could be one play, you got stuck somewhere. It could be a coach needs you to play a certain position. Somebody got hurt, that you need to know how to fill that void. But now a lot of players aren't being taught the all-around game. Middles are getting taken out in the back row. They're not taught to serve. We didn't have liberos like they do now. So our middles in college had to play defense. They had to learn how to pass. They learned how to learn how to set. And so that's stuff that I feel is being taken away from the kids, that the players back in the day had great all-around skills because we had to. You just never knew where you're going to end up. And it's same with baseball. It's like, I'm hearing a lot, you know, our neighbors and kid, they're only playing one position. I'm like, well, what happens if this first baseman goes out? Do you know what to do? And, you know, they're like lost, you know? So yes, I mean, you still need to introduce the stuff to the kids, but at some point, yeah, they're going to pinpoint one area they work on, but you still introduce all the skills, you know, and try to develop all the skills.
You know, you talked about Misty, your mom and dad, and, you know, having the pizza place by the pier and you go down. Were they more, did they push you? Did they more let you kind of fall in love with the sport? You know, I know they were both athletes too. How did that dynamic work?
I've always been very thankful. They never pushed me into one sport. My mom came from a tennis family. My grandparents had to pay me to go practice tennis. They were like, we'll give you 5 cents if you go hit every time you hit it against the backboard. So obviously you could see the passion for that kind of wasn't there. Volleyball, nobody had to tell me to grab a ball and just go outside. We lived in a small apartment. Even for soccer, it was like done with homework. It was like, I'm outside and I'm volleying the ball, you know, against the carport. So right there, that showed me that that's just something I gravitated towards, those sports. But no, my mom, even in some articles and interviews, would say if I played tiddlywinks and I was out of trouble, she was fine with that. And so that's kind of what we're doing with our daughters, is we introduce them to things and you kind of know right away, do they like it, do they not? And as long as they're having fun, they're enjoying it, they're excited to go to practice, and they're staying out of trouble. You know, that's all we can ask for.
Misty, our kids that are watching this, and they know, especially our volleyball kids who are watching this and know just how amazingly successful you've been, and they go through adversity and they go through times where they fail, and they probably look at you and they say, you know, she probably never went through those hard times. Can you share like a hard time, there's something you had to overcome in your sports journey that can kind of be an inspiration to the kids out there that are watching this and listening to this?
Oh, always. And I don't think, you know, the kids out there, don't look at it as failure, you know. And even when coaching teams, we didn't lose, we fell short, right? But it's always exciting because you get to go back to the drawing board. What happened? What can we fix? It's always fixable, right? We can control what we can. Some outcomes we can't control, but a lot of them we can, with our work ethic, you know, how we fight back, our discipline, and especially if you're part of a large team, you know, making the person next to you better. That should be your goal. But we've all failed. I wouldn't be where I am today if I didn't lose matches, get hurt, miss buses, you know, be tired, get yelled at by a coach. Like, but these are little instances that you learn from. And that's why you just have to change it in your head. It's not a failure. You didn't lose. You're not a failure. You just have things you have to work on. And that's the exciting part, is because in life, that's, we always have something we can work on. Injuries, overcome many injuries. Now, I could have said in college, I tore my PCL. Now I have a total knee replacement, but I'm out there playing again for fun. But I could have just sat back and been like, season's over, you know, okay, no problem. I'm on scholarship. Or why me, you know, why me? Oh, poor me. But I said, oh no, I want to get back on the court. What can I do? I listen to my PTs. It's the hardest thing to do is sit out, right? But the best thing to do is sit out, because you're allowing other players to step in and take on a different role and making the team stronger. So injuries, you know, take your time. If you're, and then I had my mom pass away. She never got to see me win 3 gold medals. She got to go to the Sydney Games, our first Olympics, but never got to see me win 3 gold medals. That's probably when I hit my lowest low, because half your heart's gone, right? Somebody's there that's supporting you, been there through the whole journey. And just knowing she's not going to be there this point on. But I turned that around and said, she is here, right? I feel that energy. And what would she want me to do? She'd want me to carry on. So I hit the lowest low, but was able to bounce back and say, I have to continue this journey, not for me, but to show I am stronger than I think, you know? And then, like I said, more injuries. I think that's the biggest thing. But I got burnt out from the national team. And one of the other things a lot of people don't like to talk is the political side, right? When you're part of teams and judging sports, there is a political side. And if you don't run into it one day, you're going to eventually run into it. And politics and the burnout drove me from the indoor game. But luckily I had another avenue and went to the beach side. But I would say the lowest low was my mom passing away. So if any of you out there, you've lost a dad, a mom, a brother, sister, you go out and you play for them. You play for the people that can't play. And that's kind of always been my mantra, with my dad telling me, play for those that can't. So I always thought of when I was younger, when both my parents were alive, my dad's still alive. But I went and played for, you know, the kid that is sitting in the hospital, IV, may not have tomorrow, right? Because we're not guaranteed a tomorrow. But you go out and play for those because you have that ability. That's my preach for the day.
No, that's great. Because that resonates with a lot of kids out there. and a lot of grownups as well. But I'm curious, you've talked about some times of adversity with injuries and losing your mom, and you've talked about the inner strength to kind of turn the corner and find a reason. Did that come naturally to you, or did you ever have sports psychologists help you, or anybody speak into that, or did that just come from within?
Even the sports psychology wasn't as prevalent as it is now. I think it was just something my dad from Hawaii, he's very mellow, you know, and I just learned from an early age, you can only control what you can control. You know, a lot of things you don't have control over, but even for practice, I can control my attitude headed into practice. I may not control how I practice, but I can control if I'm excited to go. And I think it was just something I got from both my parents that, you know, things are okay. Whether you have a lot or a little, things are going to be okay. You wake up every day if the sun's still shining, you know, you have a roof over your head, just to be thankful and grateful. But I think too, one of the things that can make you a better athlete is you have to be vulnerable at times. So it was a way for me to be vulnerable. You have to lead. That's why we are part of a team. You lean on your teammates or your coach. And it's okay to show vulnerability because that only makes you stronger. You know, if you're having a bad day, it's okay to come in and say, "Hey, Julie, I'm having a bad day." And it kind of relieves the pressure from your shoulders. And at least this person next to you knows, "Oh, okay, I can help you out today. Not a problem." You know, so I think those situations allowed me to work on that bit. Instead of staying so hard, it allowed me to be a little more vulnerable, which in the end, I think helped.
You know, when you look at Little League, middle school, high school, and you can pick out anyone you want, but I would love to know, and you don't have to mention names, who was your favorite coach and why, and who was your least favorite coach and why?
Oh, geez, it's a hard one. Cause I all didn't like him at one point, you know, there's always that day you're like,
yeah, but there's still one you don't like. Let's be honest.
I don't know. No, because I have friendships with him now. Like I talk to them, but my high school coach, oh my gosh, if you talked to a lot, was very tough. I think he ran us through drills knowing we weren't going to make that drill just so we could repeat it again. But in the end, it made us better. Then I had a college coach, and nowadays it's very touchy what you do, but, you know, he was very honest with us. And if you were out of shape, he wouldn't be like, "Oh, we just need to," it was like, "You're out of shape. This is where I expect you, you know, you can't do that now." And we had weigh-ins, but it made us better because we understood, wow, to perform at our peak, this is what we need to do. And then there's my dad. He is not one to give you accolades, which is fine. He'll always point out the criticism. You know, he'll always criticize. So you could come off the court 25, or for us, it was like 21-8. And he's going to tell me that serve I missed, what I did with my footwork, you know, but that's fine. I understand. But that's what I want in coaches. I want my coaches to be tough. I think there's a difference between being demeaning and mean and just attacking, but there is the coach that's tough. And we've had to explain that to my daughter. There's two different, because you get some athletes, "Oh, my coach is mean." Well, why? They made us run lines. Well, why? You missed a ball. Then, so that makes you mean, right? But I told my daughter, I said, I will take a tough coach over a mean or one that's being like, "Oh, good job, good try," any day, because I want to get better. I can't say, I mean, each of my coaches has had, you know, their ups and downs, but in the end, we're all friends and like each other. So
would you define yourself as a tough coach when you were coaching?
I would, because I take it back old school. I don't want I'm not going to let you slide. You missed study hours. Sorry, you're on the side. Really, coach? Yeah, you can't go you missed it by 2 minutes, you know? That's not fair. And then, so I'm very tough. They missed a ball. They were on the line. Gave no effort. They're on the line. But it's hard. Some kids can't take that now.
Hey, you talked about the coach who would let you know if you were out of shape, and, you know, conditioning and weight training and all that is different today than it was 20 years ago. But can you tell us a little bit? I mean, volleyball, especially beach, is so grueling from a conditioning standpoint. Can you tell us, even in your youth sports, when did you start, you know, doing weightlifting, or did you? And can you tell us a little bit about your conditioning regimen?
So being so active when I was little, obviously nothing. I mean, you can go walk in the sand and you feel what a workout it's going to be just running around. So playing multiple games on the beach when I was younger, I was getting conditioning, jumping. I didn't start lifting until my freshman year in high school because I started track. So then the football coach was the throwing coach and he was in charge of the jumpers and I did sprints as well. But that's when I started working on Olympic lifts. So for me, and I know some programs have tailored back on Olympic lifting and everybody's body type's different and it takes a while to figure out what actually works for your body. For me, the Olympic lifting I love, and that for me, jumping wise, I had a higher vertical when I did it and was able to lift heavy, and my body type is different. Everybody's body type is different. For the kids now, I feel like there's so many overuse injuries that for them, lifting is not important. It's like working on all their small muscle groups just to keep them going from one day to the next. But I think, you know, by about freshman year is a good time to kind of start tailoring because you're still growing, you know, and we're getting that professional help that you need. Working on speed, again, with playing soccer and being out on the sand on off days and doing track, I was getting my agility in, you know. But if you're the multi or if you're the single sport, you need to do your ladder drills. You need to me, indoor volleyball players and beach players, you train them like football players, you know, the receivers. So you got to work on all the lateral movements and the quick and the sprints and movement, I think, is one of the biggest things I see with young kids. I have junior college players that I coached that didn't know how to use their arms to jump, running through the ladder, using their arm, like running technique, you know, being efficient. So if they can teach that at an early age, that would help, I think, the movement as well.
Talk about a little bit, just, you know, and this is more of just kind of, what was it like to stand on that podium and win an Olympic gold medal? Because a lot of us have always wondered that. I mean, even for me.
So Carrie and I never missed an opening ceremonies. That's one of my best highlights of the Olympics, is walking behind your flag and you hear the crowd cheer, whether they're for you or against you, you don't know. But standing up there after you win, it's like that movie will always play back. There's nothing better than honoring our flag and our country. And when national anthems are played, whether it's a baseball game, a NASCAR race, a football game on TV, you get goosebumps. And it just has, not that it wasn't important before, because I think it's very important, but that it has a whole different meaning, brings a whole nother level to the national anthem.
Which one was your favorite Olympics of all? I know you played in four, but to win the three, which one was your favorite?
They all had different journeys. And that's what's so exciting. So, well, London is the biggest one. Then Beijing, the gold medal has a white jade on the back, which I never knew there was a white jade. I just thought jade came in green. And then Greece was like the smallest medal. But Greece, Carrie and I were so young. I think, won off of physicality because we were just like, oh, we're the heavy favorites going in. Physical, oh, we won, back on a plane, headed to another AVP event. So we just didn't even know. It was just kind of part of our regimen. Beijing, I thought that was going to be my last Olympics. And so I had a ton of family there. And we had lost to that Chinese team in Austria. And so that's always in the back of your mind. And we're playing on their home soil and it's raining. But Carrie and I said, you know what? It's raining. It's a great day to win. But losing to that team was certainly in the back of our mind. And we ended up winning. So that was like a completely different mental journey. And physical, we still had it. But I think our mental side, because we had been through it before, certainly helped to that gold. Then in the last Olympics, we hadn't played with each other for 2 years. Carrie has kids. I ruptured my Achilles tendon, which can be sometimes a career-ending injury, but came back. And my 80% was my 100%, but our bodies, right? They work miracles. And my PTs were great. But I knew at that point my mental side was going to be stronger than my physical side. Carrie will argue with you because she's always physical, you know. But I was like, I'm going to be real. And I know physically I'm this way. My mental side has to pick up. And I think the London Games was more mental for us because we had one up on everybody else. But nobody saw us meddling. We weren't the favorites going in. Nobody saw us on the podium. We won the last event going into the Olympics, which I think set the tone. But because we had been there before, we knew how to handle all the media. And it was just the main focus of us as a team. Nothing else kind of mattered. But as long as we believe and we work towards our goal, things will happen. And that's, so it was like a completely different journey. And I knew that that was my last one. So walking off the sand, I was like, my body has given it all it can give.
I'm done.
We enjoyed watching that ride.
Be a mom.
Hey, Misty, you just talked about the mental side and the physical side. And, you know, I think a lot of kids really get the physical side, but how would you tell a kid, how do they develop the mental side of sports in their youth sports time? How do they start to develop that?
I think it goes back with studying the game, being the best prepared that you can, and overlearning, right? So again, if you're a quarterback, don't just learn the quarterback position, learn the other positions, because ultimately it's going to make your job better. But to taking it back, why are you playing? Like, are your parents pushing you? Because that then is miserable. You're kind of like, I don't want to be there and I'm just going through the motions. Or do you really love the game? You know, if you love the game, then you go out there and you play. You're going to win some, you're going to lose some. At the end of the day, it's okay. You know, you're still learning. Even at the professional level, you're still learning. But I think using different breathing techniques, you know, and not, I don't want to say not taking it so serious, because if it's a career, you have to take it serious. But at the end of the day, there's so many other things that are so much bigger that are happening, that one loss or that one, it doesn't really matter. It's a non-factor. But I think everybody puts so much pressure on them that they lie so much. This defines who I am. It doesn't define who you are. What you do on the sports field does not define who you are. You know, it's how you carry yourself after a win. How do you carry yourself after a loss? How do you treat your teammates? How do you treat your parents? A lot of my college coach said she recruited sometimes off of how she saw them treat their parents after a game. She'd go around and they'd be like, oh, we're going to go watch this recruit. And then she'd listen to how the person, mom, I want my water. Give me my water. She was like, well, that person's off, you know, because she's like, if she's going to treat the parents like that or the athlete, then how are they going to treat the coach? But I think a lot, you know, I just feel like parents put the pressure and the kids too, that this defines who they are as a person. And it absolutely does not. And we all have different gifts. I was thinking about this morning because I was like, oh, I'd like to add this is, you know, the mental side of it. If you're not the most physical, then you beat them with your strength. There's always ways around. So even like I was thinking about the baseball and I was like, if I was a pitcher and I could only throw 70 miles an hour, who knows if I'd be drafted, but whatever, but 70 miles an hour, but I could move the ball all over the place. There's going to be a spot for me somewhere, right? But don't try to fight fire with fire. If you don't have that fire, don't try to match it. Everybody, that's what makes everybody so unique, is everybody's different. Figure out what your strengths are, figure out what your weaknesses are, work on those weaknesses to bring it up, to help balance out. But if you can't, don't try to overthink it and fight power with power. If you're against somebody, stay with what you know, because it's going to work. Stay with your fundamentals, stay with your strengths, and it'll ultimately working. But we see too many people, especially in volleyball, I want to hit with power. It's like, well, you're 5'5", the net is 5'8.5", but you want to hit with power. It's just not going to be possible. We'll work on it, but your strength is going to be moving the ball around, hitting off the block. You've got to restructure your game to work to your strength and use this up here. You know, use your, what God gave you up between your ears.
Misty, if you ever got back into coaching and were recruiting again, and you mentioned a lot of this in terms of your old coach, but what's one quality, you taking all talent, making that talent being equal, what's one quality that you would look for in a player that you would say that's the most important thing that I'm looking for of a kid that I want to be on my team or a kid that I want to offer a scholarship to? What's that?
I think how they embrace the team. So like their team, how are they treating the players around you? Because I'll teach the skill, you know, you may not have, I'll teach the skill, but I want players that you see that fire in their eyes and that are willing to work for everyone around them, you know, that have a positive attitude. It's not a one-man show, except for some sports, right? You're against the clock, but it's not a one-man show. So you have to ask of your teammates around you. You've got to be able to rely on them and be a good team player.
Love that. As we're finishing up here with Misty May, I got my final question for you would be, now that you're a mom and you have your own kids, between your parents, all the great coaches that you've had, what's a couple, you know, key traits that you want to instill in your kids as they grow, not just through sports, but in life, that either, you know, wasn't instilled in you or that you love that, you know, someone did for you?
Matt and I actually had a conversation with our 8-year-old, and we were saying, you know, if you want to get to a certain level, you start to identify the people around you that are going to help get you there. Because, you know, you get the school kids and it's about making choices. You know, the crowd you're hanging out with, one choice leads to another. You know, where does that take you? Does it take you towards your goal or away? And, you know, this happens at the professional level. You have those clingers or the large entourages and you're like, then you're done. And it's like, where are they now? Or you need their help. And so that's what we're trying to teach our daughter, Malia, is it's okay to have limited friends, but make sure they're friends with the same ideals, you know, as far as pumping you up and they're not drink, you know, and attaching yourself to good people, good character, you know, good character traits that, you know, want the best for you and you want the best for them. And you can all head towards that goal. You know, be careful not to get pulled in a direction by the magnets, or I'll call them the anchors. And for those athletes out there, you know, go through your friends or your list of who is part of your team. I'll call your surrounding, like community, like your team, and who takes more than they give. It's like, that's an anchor. It's okay to let them go. It may hurt. You may feel bad, but that's okay. You're going to continue to make friends along the way, and you're going to continue to track the people you want to align yourself, you know, that have the same goals.
Man, I think I could use that advice now.
Well, another thing too, is, you know, I wish I was a little more independent in college. You know, and this goes for like the female, and I'm going to get into them, but it's like, have a boyfriend. It's okay to be by yourself. You don't need to, you know, feel like you need to keep up with the person next to you or follow. It's okay. Team's going out. You don't want to go out. It's okay. You don't need to go out. You know, it's okay to be your own person and be independent. And I wish I would have had a little more strength to do that now. Just to be who I'm not going to that party, or I'm not doing, it's okay to say no.
Well, Misty, this kind of brings us to the end, and those are awesome words. And, you know, I just want to say thanks so much for sharing not just your experiences, but the things that you've learned. And, you know, we've got a lot of parents listening, but we've also got a lot of kids listening. And, I said at the beginning that, you know, volleyball is now the most popular girl sport in the country. And so I know there are a ton of girls out there and guys too, that are listening and really, you know, it's been a privilege to hear, from your experiences. And I know that you offered a lot of things for them to think about and take away. So again, thanks so much for joining us today. We really appreciate it. And with that, we'll kind of close out today. Yes, go ahead.
Can I add one more? Can I add
absolutely
one thing?
Bring it.
Because you brought up the parents. Again, parents, as your kids are getting recruited, remember the college coaches are looking at you as well. How do you behave in the crowd? And I think it's important now. I found myself at a 4-year-old soccer game throwing my coffee because I was like, one girl was dragging the other one down. She's 6 years old, grabbing the other, you know, dragging down. It's like, okay, there's a right way to play and wrong way. And I was like, but I wasn't mad at her. It's just, you know, if you're going to teach the right way. And it's okay to, I understand they're shoving. I played soccer, but to physically grab, you know, so I found myself as one of those, like, Matt's like, don't get on the field. I'm like, well, I'm the assistant. I just want to tell him, like, calm down. But I think, you know, parents, it carries over from you because your kids still are learning. So when you're yelling in the crowd, you know, I go to some club tournaments and I see the parents yell at the poor 12-year-old scorekeepers and they're just trying their best. You know, the kids on the court trying their best. You know, the fights that you see on the news, it's like over a little league, it's okay. Like, it's not that important. So if the parents can just learn to control and cheer for both sides, just cheer for good play, you know, the kids, I think, you know, will learn from that, because it, like I said, the kids still take from their parents, you know. So parents, if you can just be supportive of your athletes, of all the athletes, and cheer for both sides and cheer for just good play, I think we'll start to see some changes. So,
well, I know I can say, as having a 9-year-old daughter, thank you for all the things and the inspiration, because I know you were a lot of fun to watch, and obviously I got to know you, but thank you so much for joining us today, Misty.
No problem. I'm glad I got the call.
Thank you, Misty.
We appreciate it.
I'm glad you.
This is great. Thank you so much.
No problem. No problem. Anytime. Thank you.
Thanks for joining us for the Pure Athlete Podcast. For more, check out our website at www.pureathleteinc.com and follow us on social media at Pure Athlete Inc. See you next time.